everybody across the land. Here's a special from Sequel Cast, though I don't know what it's gonna be about. Maybe Woody Allen, maybe Spike Lee, maybe Technicolor, maybe 3D, or maybe you just gotta wait and see. You're gonna find out after this theme. This Sequel Cast special is a go. This Sequel Cast special is a go.
And welcome to the Sequel Cast Special. The Sequel Cast Special is a podcast where we look at movie topics at large, usually related to sequels of some kind. I'm your host, Matt.
And this is your co-host, Thrasher.
And you can check out our website at sequelcast.com for our other podcast. And our theme song is written and performed by Mark with the C. Check out his music at Mark with check out his music at markwiththec.com.
Lady.
And you can also listen to the Sequel Cast shows at Stitcher with an app, streaming smart radio on the go. Download it at stitcher.com/sequelcast, and the Sequel Cast gets added as one of your favorite shows. Now, here in Sequel Cast Special, I was looking at recent movies that came out, and I thought it would be fun to do one on fairy tale movies.
Yeah, there's been a lot of material to work with.
Yeah, and it's all in public domain, too, so that's nice. You don't have to pay the author anything to make a movie based off of Snow White or Jack and the Beanstalk, or I mean, some of the more recent ones I can think of are Hansel and Gretel, Witch Hunters, and Jack the Giant Slayer.
Well, to be fair, you do owe some scratch and royalties if you want to do a movie about the taking of Sleeping Beauty.
Because it was an Anne Rice erotic novel, is that where you're getting at?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Under her pen name.
Anne Rice isn't her pen name?
Anne Rice is her real name.
Really?
But she did those, what was it? Let me look that up. She did the Sleeping Beauty.
I could have, like, Anne Rice just always sounded like a pen name to me.
No, she did it under the pen name, or pseudonym, of A.N. Roquelaure. I can't pronounce, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that. And that was a series of, you know, kind of like erotic novels, claiming of Sleeping Beauty, Beauty's Punishment, and Beauty's Release.
Oh, my.
Which they've recently re-released in new printings because 50 Shades of Grey is so popular. But we're not talking about erotica novellas. We are talking about fairy films or TV shows or what have you based off of fairy tales.
Put the porn away. Bring in the kids. It's time to talk about fairy tales.
Now, one thing you brought up, Thrasher, as we talked before recording the show, which I think is an excellent point, is we aren't going to talk about Disney cartoons based off of fairy tales, because
yeah,
that could be a show in itself.
Yeah, there's just so many it would dominate the episode, but there's so many we could do another Sequel Cast special about that.
Absolutely. You know, I think the Disney stuff would be ripe for Sequel Cast Special, because not a lot of their stuff had sequels, but I think it's still worth talking about. So, when you think of, like, movies or TV shows or whatever based off of fairy tales, what is one that comes to mind?
Well, probably the biggest one that comes to mind was actress Shelley Duvall produced a whole series of fairy tale adaptations back in the early days of cable and home video, Shelley Duvall's Fairy Tale Theater. And I grew up watching those. They are, and I've actually, last year, actually rewatched most of them. They're very good and they still hold up. I mean, the only thing that dates them is they use a lot of outdated video production techniques.
Yeah, I mean, they did come out with all the series on DVD. And it's available, I think it used to be available in some streaming services.
I think it still is.
Is it? Okay. So, I mean, like, Tim Burton directed a few episodes early in his career.
And what's great is they have fascinating casts. I mean, she got some real A-list people to appear in these shows. And like Robin Williams plays the Frog Prince. The Fairytale Theater version of Aladdin is amazing because not only does Leonard Nimoy play the evil vizier, but James Earl Jones plays the genie. And when he comes out covered in like blue paint body glitter with these crazy goblin ears, I mean, he looks just like the genies described in translations of the Arabian Nights. It is so good.
What I like in that one, that Aladdin is played by Robert Carradine. Better known as Louis Skolnick from Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh, and their version of Pinocchio had Paul Rubens as Pinocchio.
Yeah.
Although I think the the other thing is that even though like they work on a couple of different levels, because even though the audience you would think is children, it really is families, because they have. There's lots of stuff going on for adults, too. One of my favorite being their version of Little Red Riding Hood. Malcolm McDowell plays the big bad wolf, and he plays him almost exactly like his character from Clockwork Orange.
That's terrifying. Now, did he have, face makeup?
Yeah, he has kind of, his nose is painted black, and he has these kind of exaggerated eyebrows and mutton chops, and then this crazy, furry head with ears, and... Otherwise wears human clothes that look like they're stolen. But yeah, I mean, you know, the sexual undertones of the Red Riding Hood story, they play up with his character. But it's stuff that kids won't notice. But it's stuff that adults who understand what that story is a cautionary tale about can really enjoy. Hmm. And of course, if you've seen Clockwork Orange, you can imagine that this is just some sort of weird psychosexual fantasy that character is having.
Yeah, I recall an episode from that show of The Pied Piper, where Eric Idle played the Pied Piper, and that one was written and directed by Nicholas Meyer.
Who, oh, yeah.
Listeners might recognize as he directed two of the Star Trek films.
Trek 2. He wrote Wrath of Khan, and he wrote and directed Undiscovered Country.
He directed Wrath of Khan, and also directed Wright, and was a writer on Star Trek 6, Undiscovered Country. You are correct.
And who can forget his debut, Invasion of the B-Girls, which is an amazing movie about sexual politics.
He also directed a film, speaking of Malcolm McDowell, called Time After Time.
Oh, yeah.
With
where that song is from.
No, I don't think, no.
No, that was the love scene from that movie.
Is it? I don't...
Yep.
Ugh. I'd have to watch it again. But anyway, Time After Time is a really cool movie. About H.G. Wells versus Jack the Ripper,
and it works surprisingly well. It's like probably the only good science fiction romance that's ever made it to film.
Hmm. You've talked a bit about this fairy tale theater Shelley Duvall show. I'm thinking of some more recent, because there's been a lot of movies recently based off of fairy tales, and I was thinking. Of
stay on target
I don't know if I'd call this a good movie, but I kind of enjoyed it in spite of itself. It was
have to call it a good movie.
Yeah, no, I don't, I liked it because of its campiness. I think it was a 2011 film called Red Riding Hood, directed by Catherine Hardwicke, who directed the first Twilight film, and it starred Amanda Seyfried, and Gary Oldman is in it as well as Jeremy Irons' son, Max Irons. So, which it's a very loose kind of version of Red Riding Hood, where she lives in this village, and it's sort of a mystery who is really the wolf, and it has
a lot of werewolf thing.
When they make it a mystery is who the identity of that at, but Gary Oldman is just really so campy as this witch hunter, or he's a preacher that comes to town. It's been a while since I've seen it.
Is he just playing up the whole butler or villain stereotype?
Oh yeah, to the hilt. You can tell he's having a lot of fun.
Well, that's good. That is one thing I like about British actors. If you give them a campy or even or a not that strong role, they will still play it up, and it is you get so much entertainment out of it.
Yeah, I think like the costumes and the set design is like very moody, very interesting. Like overall, the movie isn't great, but I think it knows what it was trying to do. It wasn't trying to step outside its boundaries. Like it's trying to be a kind of spooky little fairy tale, and on that level, I think it worked.
That's cool, but I mean, I guess that is a big thing when is fairy tales getting kind of made more adult and getting sexualized, and nowhere it was that more. More prominent than in the golden age of pornography, the 1970s, with the film Once Upon a Girl.
Oh, I've never seen this one.
This is back in the days when a lot of pornos were getting sort of front loaded, I should say, with like sort of story and a certain modicum of production value and humor. And so this. Once Upon a Girl was a porno film where Hal Smith plays Mother Goose, who's being put on trial for obscenity, and because she's trying to tell the true stories of all the different fairy tales, and then it cuts into these different vignettes where you get a humorous body skit involving classic fairy tale characters, and then they have some sex.
But the stories are all animated.
I think most of them were, yes. And Frank Welker actually provided a voice.
Huh. And what do you say? It's worth watching then?
I think yes, only because, but keep in mind, though, I am a devotee of campy 1970s cinema.
Yeah.
But I mean, the fact is, you get good, dirty humor that would never make it into a Hollywood film. And I really do appreciate that.
And a lot of the animators that worked on that apparently were from Disney. So,
well, they were the best at the time, so you got to go for them.
I just love the poster of Once Upon a Girl. It makes me want to see the film.
With the sexy Mother Goose
sexy
straddling
Mother Goose,
the suggestive goose.
Straddling, I guess, the goose that lays the golden eggs, I presume. And it says Bedtime Stories for Grown-Ups. Yeah, I didn't know that existed. Thank you, Thrasher.
Oh, no problem. It's just one of those obscure bits of interesting porno and fairy tale trivia that I've acquired over the years.
Every once in a while, and I should do this more, I don't watch like really old movies that often, but I managed to catch a 1946 live-action adaptation of Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, yes? Oh, is it the French one?
It's the French one, yes.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Because it was part of the Criterion Collection, and my wife and I subscribe to... Hulu, and they have a section of Criterion Collection movies, which is typically foreign films. Do you know what Criterion Collection is, Thrasher?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, and if listeners, if you don't know, and Criterion stuff is it's typically foreign films, but not always. But it's like films that...
They're great films.
Yeah, great films from around the world, and they're released in these pristine, on DVD and Blu-ray, and you can see them streaming if you have a Hulu Plus subscription. And if you want to find out more about Criterion Films, I want to recommend a podcast, The Criterion Cast, by Ryan Gallagher, who's also out of Portland, Oregon, like me. And it's a really great podcast about all the newer and older films they release on Blu-ray. You can hear about all that stuff on Criterion Cast at CriterionCast.com. So, anyway, this Beauty and the Beast black and white film directed by Jean Cocteau is... really pretty, and just the design for the beast is works a lot better than you think it would.
It's a really good makeup effect, but yeah. Also like he's no particular animal. He's just like little bits and pieces of different animals are reflected on him, and then it's just bulked up with like classic finery, the frilled collars, the poofy jacket and pants. Like when you think you have his animal features pinned down, oh, he's kind of a tiger. Then you notice, oh no, that's more canine, and it really makes him truly something other.
Yeah.
Oh, and you know what? I know people probably won't believe this, but when the Sci-Fi Channel first started, they used to show this film.
Really?
They used to show classic works of science fiction and fantasy, and this was one of the favorites.
before it became the kind of like Bravo. It just became a reality show channel.
Yeah, and the Learning like Bravo, the Learning Channel, and the Discovery Channel,
and A&E.
Any channel that was truly had that could have achieved greatness, it had to commit a slow suicide.
Well, and I say that liking some of these reality shows, but when it's, I don't know, I think it kind of loses something where, I mean, what's the identity of the station anymore? It's almost like, I don't know, like, I do, if you like science fiction kind of monster stuff, I'd recommend a reality show on Sci-Fi Channel called Face Off, where it's a competition of
makeup artists.
Yeah, I think you'd like that, Thrasher.
No, actually, I saw one of the winners at Scarefest last year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was one of the special media guests.
Did you talk to him, or you just saw that he was there?
No, it was very brief. I had a friend who wanted to get his autograph, so I was hanging out with him.
Oh, so it's the winner of the first season, I take it.
I guess so. I honestly don't remember.
Right. So what's another fairy tale film on your list?
Well, actually, I've got several. Some people out there may remember the Cannon Group, which was a movie production house started by Mannheim Golan and Yoram Globus, also known as Golan Globus, who produced some of the most atrocious films of the 1980s. They were
a lot of action films, right?
Breakin' and Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo. They were behind Superman 4, The Quest for Peace. I think they were behind most of the Delta Force movies. But they just churned out these subpar films. One of the exceptions, though, is they had a whole line of fairy tale films, most of which came out, it looks like, in the 1987, the Cannon Movie Tales, where they took, you know, just classic fairy tales and children's stories and turned them into musicals and tried to make it as lavish as they could on what limited budget they have. So the best thing about these movies are the casts.
Hmm.
And they don't have them. And I will say this, though, the songs are very, very uneven. All the songs in these movies are either really bad or really good, and there is no middle ground.
Have these been released on DVD and stuff?
Several have. I don't know if they all have, and I don't know if there's a collection. Regrettably, though, they are kind of hard to find. Jersey Jason and I actually spent, back when we were living in Georgia, we spent 2 years trying to track down a DVD of the Cannon Movie Tales Puss in Boots, which we eventually found at the local media play before it completely shut down. Actually, that might have been during its going at a business sale. And the reason why you must see the Cannon Movie Tales version of Puss in Boots is that Puss is played by Christopher Walken.
I might have seen that one as a kid, actually. I've certainly seen a clip of it.
Yeah, it's really good. And like, and he the man knows how to play a cat, and he does good singing and good dancing and just camps it up in all the best ways. Like this whole bit where he's like, he's explaining, like, you know, it's all the rage. And he almost sounds like he's trying to impersonate Tim Curry. But that one is really entertaining, though it does get off to a real slow start. I think it's about 15 minutes before Walken shows up. Another good one is there's Snow White, which is actually slavishly faithful to the original story. To the point where the Wicked Queen makes multiple failed attempts to kill Snow White, such as the poison comb. There's the poison apples, of course, what gets her, but before that is the poisoned comb, and I could swear there's another one. It's been a while since I've seen that one.
You know, it looks like from my rough research, in the United States at least, 7 out of the 9 of these were released individually on a DVD through MGM. But 2 were not. Those being the Frog Prince was one of those. And Sleeping Beauty.
Mm. Those are actually two I never saw. Although Jason saw The Frog Prince. He said that was pretty good.
Neat.
Although, if I may, the last... I do want to talk about one more of these movies. That being The Emperor's New Clothes, which stars Sid Caesar as the Emperor. And it is Sid Caesar. It is Sid Caesariest.
Yeah.
Wearing practically the same costume from his guest spot on the Mel Brooks Robin Hood sitcom When Things Were Rotten. But, like, it's really great, but I really love the way they take it, because the guys, the people making the Emperor's New Clothes are a pair of father and son con artists. And, you know, for the father, he's always looking for the next big con, and the son is thinking about trying to go straight. And there's this awesome musical number where the father is singing to his son about why cons are important, and how what they're doing is noble and in a certain way heroic. You know, don't call it a con, call this job a conquest. And there are these two ridiculously foppish advisors to the king who are so bought into the idea of the clothes that they actually start hallucinating that there's real fabric. And there's this great song with those two guys and Sid Caesar where they're arguing about what color the fabric actually is. Because, of course, if you've read the story, none of them have actually seen the fabric. And the king deludes himself into thinking that it's purple based on their contradicting descriptions of the outfit. That overall, I would say The Emperor's New Clothes is the one that's probably the most entertaining.
I'd like to talk about a pair of films that came out in 2012.
And
you know, every once in a while, there'll be a year where two movies come out on the exact same sort of, like, story or topic.
Oh, yeah, that horrible film Resonance.
Yeah, and in 2012, two movies based on Snow White came out, two live-action films. Mirror, Mirror was the first to be released, directed by Tarsem Singh, who's probably best known for directing The Cell with Jennifer Lopez. And this one is
starring Jennifer Lopez and lots of plagiarized installation art.
Oh, yeah. But in Mirror, Mirror, though, it stars Lily Collins, yes, Phil Collins' daughter, as Snow White. Julia Roberts is the Evil Queen. Nathan Lane is kind of the foppish Evil Queen's assistant. And this film actually won an Oscar for Best Costume Design.
It had some pretty lush costumes.
Oh, did you see this?
Yes, I saw this. Okay. I saw this with Sarah last year, actually.
Huh. I think the costumes, were pretty and bizarre at the same time. I mean, they're certainly very visually distinctive. But I just found this movie to be a complete bore, aside from a crazy Bollywood dance sequence at the end.
Which is a pretty good Bollywood dance sequence.
It is.
How did Bollywood become popular? Because there's, like, the past, like, 5 years, there have been Bollywood dance numbers have been showing up in movies and TV shows.
Like, what are some other movies with Bollywood dance numbers?
Let's see. I believe The Love Guru had one.
Yeah.
That film that wasn't The Love Guru, which I believe was just called The Guru, had one. The TV show Passions, and it's, I think, second to last season, did an elaborate Bollywood dance routine.
I think more recently, in 2008, there was a film called Slumdog Millionaire, where at the end, right around before the end credits, the characters break out into a Bollywood dance number. Oh, that's a film set in India. So maybe that's kicked off some of the more recent stuff. I don't know, but
I suppose so, because I still don't know anyone besides me who's ever seen a Bollywood film. Oh, I take that back. Some of my friends from college had seen some, although three of them were from India. But it just seems such a weird thing to be showing up in movies. I can't imagine the audiences have any idea what they're seeing.
I saw part, I can't recall the name of it, but I saw part of a Bollywood movie that was like a vampire film.
Oh, yeah?
And it was also like a musical, you know.
Oh, no, they're just about all musicals.
Yeah.
That's a staple
and
of this.
Right. Like, we couldn't get through the whole film. I think it was like 3 hours long or something.
Wait, is that the infamous one with the Bollywood thriller routine?
I don't even remember the title. This would have been like 5 years ago.
Look up Bollywood Thriller. There's a Bollywood horror movie where there is a Bollywood musical number that's meant to echo that's clearly meant to echo the music video from Thriller, but it's very, very entertaining. But yeah, I did see, like, I enjoyed Mirror Mirror. I was entertained, although keep in mind I came in halfway through. Although it does, okay. It does, like, go to a well that a lot of these modern big budget fairy tale movies are, where, like, they have to cram in as many action set pieces as possible to the point where they're like, it seems like they're trying to take a princess and make her into a warrior queen.
Yeah.
Not that I'm against warrior queens. I think a lot of the character gets destroyed when you do that to an established princess.
I mean, the other Snow White film that came out in 2012 that I actually liked better was Snow White and the Huntsman, starring Kristen Stewart as Snow White, Charlize Theron as the Evil Queen, and Chris Hemsworth as the Huntsman. Did you see this one, Thrasher?
No, I didn't. I saw the trailer.
Okay. I thought the special effects were actually quite good, even excellent in spots. Like, visually, it had a lot more to it than I expected. But I think it falls into the trap of the stories, the fairy tales, you know, these kind of movies are based off of are very simple. And this one just seemed to complicate stuff as much as possible. You have, like, a zillion different creatures, and you have all the dwarves, and you have Snow White and the Huntsman and the Queen, and just so much shit going on, it just felt like too much to cram into one movie.
That's another, I think, weakness with a lot of modern fairy tale adaptations, is that they try to build an elaborate mythology when all the mythology you need is right there in the story.
Right. I think I would have liked it if it was a bit simpler, but I thought visually it was real fantastic. Like, I wasn't expecting much, and I was just sort of blown away by some of the special effects in there.
And of course, there's also the bad habit of having to turn everything, even a story which is really kind of, really a sort of a romance, turning everything into a final battle between good and evil.
Yeah, where it's like Lord of the Rings in a big epic fight with two armies fighting against each other. And yeah, the way they did the dwarves and Snow White and the Huntsman is weird. Because like in Mirror Mirror, it was with the actors that were dwarves, you know, like small people, little people. And in Mirror Mirror, it was regular actors whose like faces were superimposed into little people or something.
They could have had Dinklage, but they turned him down.
Right. And it comes off looking really weird. And you have great actors playing the part of the dwarves in Snow White and the Huntsman, like Bob Hoskins and, oh shit, what's his name? The guy from Deadwood, Ian McShane. Mm. Toby Jones is one of them. Ray Winstone. I mean, a lot of excellent actors.
But isn't that just such a total fuck you to people like Peter Dinklage and Warwick Davis, people who actually do have that build and are good actors and could do that role?
Yes, but how about this on for size? I mean, do you think it's a fuck you that, like, none of the dwarves in Hobbit or Lord of the Rings, or the Hobbits for that matter, you know, were played by actors that are dwarves?
You know, no, I'm thinking about it. Not, I guess I guess it is kind of when you come down to it, it is kind of a fuck you. Except that in those movies, everything gets touched up with CGI. Nothing you're seeing on screen is really anything that was actually filmed. So in that case, it just sort of plays up the artificiality of those movies. Second, you know, it's a freaking huge cast. I can't imagine. I guess that is a fuck you. Now that I think about it, yeah, it won't stop me from enjoying the movies. But yeah, I can see that is a fuck you. That there are actors with that size and build they could go to, but for whatever reason they're going with bigger names.
What is a another fairy tale film or TV show you'd like to talk about?
Oh, gosh. Well, as far as... I'd like to talk about a phenomenon. This was much bigger on TV in the late 80s, early 90s. But just how far the definition of fairy tale kind of gets stretched. such as there was an animated TV show in the 80s, Hello Kitty's Furry Tale Theater. There was also a spin-off of a spin-off of Alf called Alf Tales, where it was Alf put into these different sort of mythological stories.
What?
Except they really just like just stretch what constituted a fairy tale. I remember there was like an episode of Hello Kitty where it was pretty much Star Wars. There is an Alf Tales about John Henry, which is a hilarious recontextualizing about John Henry. Instead of being a steel driving man working the railroads, he was a chef who had to compete against a high tech Cuisinart. But at the same time, that's not a fairy tale. That's folklore. And I do make a distinction.
What's the distinction?
Fairy tales generally are sort of cautionary or educational stories meant for a young audience, but folklore tells you more about the nature of the culture that the story emerged from to begin with. And I'm sure there are anthropology professors who have a much better definition than that, but that's more or less my take on it. But I don't know, would you consider Star Wars a fairy tale in space?
Yeah, I mean, kind of. You know, we covered all the Star Wars films over on the SequelCast at sequelcast.com. And yeah, I guess so. I mean, I've heard in interviews where people have described it as Mark Hamill described it as you could take the same story and make it about a young man finds a wizard on the road and rescues a princess. And you're taking sort of fantasy trappings, but dressing them up in science fiction with spaceships and aliens and that sort of thing. And yeah, structurally, I guess it is closer to fantasy than science fiction.
Well, what fairy tale TV shows did you want to reach out towards?
You know, I don't know if I'd call this a TV show, but this is something I did watch in high school. Is in the late 90s, there was a miniseries called The Tenth Kingdom.
Oh, I saw that a few years ago.
What did you think?
I was very entertained. Like, I was all sad to say, I was all kind of primed to be disappointed. But it was a very good miniseries.
It came out in the year 2000, and I said the late 90s. I was slightly off.
So brilliant cast, though. John LaRocquette, Rick Mayall.
Oh, Warwick Davis is in there. Ed O'Neill's in there. I mean, so many great actors. And just the concept about how someone from modern day travels to a fantasy world very loosely reminds me of a TV show that's currently on TV called Once Upon a Time.
Oh, yeah.
Where that's more about like parallel lives between characters in the real world and the fairy tale world. But it's the concept, I guess, of mashing up all these different fairy tales.
Well, all these different fairy tales that are owned by Disney.
I wouldn't say they're not owned by Disney. You can't own a fairy tale.
No. If you follow that, remember that is produced by Disney.
It is produced by Disney, yes.
Everything ties into an established Disney franchise. For instance, did you notice that the dog is named Pongo after the 101 Dalmatians?
I did not, but that's interesting.
When the show started, I honestly thought, oh, this is just an excuse for Disney to build equity with its franchises. I've seen some of the more recent episodes, and I do kind of like how they're branching out. I absolutely love the backstory for Rumpelstiltskin.
Well, the actor that plays Rumpelstiltskin is really quite good, Robert Carlyle. He has a lot of creepy makeup. I need to get more into that series because I was sort of more like in the room as my wife was watching it for a lot of the first season, and now I'm kind of lost. And like another contemporary TV show that kind of takes this concept of fairy tales is Grimm.
I would say that it doesn't. It's just a Monster of the Week show, and they happen to name drop the brothers Grimm.
It's Monster of the Week show meets cops, but some of the stuff is based off of like monsters from fairy tales, like werewolves or ogres or what have you. And
but they got to give them a fancy Dutch sounding name, though.
A German name, yeah, sure. No, you're right. And they film it around where I live in Portland, Oregon, and I've seen them film downtown a few times, which is sort of fun. And I think the show has Grimm has gotten better as it's gone on. I think at the beginning of the show, it kind of does the trope that a lot of TV shows do, where if you have one character with a secret ability, and Grimm, the main character, can tell, you know, when it's like a human that underneath is some sort of monster, right? But no one else can see it.
And yeah, he can see the true form.
Yes. And in the first season, they try and keep it like a secret, like no one else can know that he knows except his best friend.
And who happens to be a monster.
Who's also a monster.
Even though they just met.
Yeah, and they quickly drop that to the wayside to introduce more psychic characters to be in on the secret, cool. Which I think helps the show, because as you go from season to season and you try and stretch incredulity, you try and stretch believability, and that how long can this guy keep this secret without these guys noticing it? So...
Although I do have to ask, because Buffy the Vampire Slayer had a lot of Monster of the Week, but they always yes. justified it by the Hellmouth attracted and released negative supernatural influences, which is why there was always a monster for Buffy to go after. Do they give any explanation for why there are so many creatures living in Portland? Or is it just an unfortunate coincidence that that's where most of the world's monsters live and they never move, even though a monster hunter lives there?
I think it's a coincidence. I mean, there is like some sort of secret bad guy society of some of the monsters. And I do think the special effects for when they transform into monsters or animals or whatever look pretty shitty looking. Like, I don't think those look very impressive. But just the combination of cops and monsters, I think, is kind of a fun show. So I think that's all right. I'd like to get more into... what we just were talking about. What is that called? Jesus Christ.
Fairy Tales, Grimm?
Not Grimm. We're talking about Tenth Kingdom.
Oh, yes, Tenth Kingdom.
Yeah, I'd like to get more into that.
Oh, yes.
No, Once Upon a Time, I'm sorry.
Oh, Ed O'Neill is the Troll King. I forgot about that.
Troll King, yep.
It is a real kick-ass cast.
Yeah. And do you think we can mention Into the Woods?
That's one of my favorite musicals, absolutely.
They did a film performance of that musical with Bernadette Peters, I believe.
Yes, I believe it was part of the Great Performances.
On PBS, yeah.
Oh. And it is actually kind of shocking to me that hasn't been made into a movie. It just seems right. Like all the elements are right there.
Well, I have a funny story about Into the Woods, but why don't you describe it to our listeners?
Okay, well, Into the Woods, it's a musical theater piece. But it's a mashup of classic fairy tales. The premise of the movie is that Jack and the Beanstalk, Little Red Riding Hood, Sleeping Beauty, Rapunzel, all these stories all take place on the same night, and that all the characters take shortcuts through the same woods and run into each other and interact in different ways. But what's brilliant is that it takes it a step further, because when they reach Happily Ever After, that's when the intermission starts, and then it begins several weeks after Happily Ever After, and you get to see the fallout of everyone's happy ending, all building up to the big fallout, which is the giant's wife, the giant that Jack from Jack and the Beanstalk killed. She comes down the beanstalk to get revenge. And it's an apocalyptic event as this giant just goes destroying the kingdom. And, you know, you learn who the real heroes are, who the real villains are, and Jack has to grow up and become a man by taking responsibility for his action.
Yeah, and the first act, you know, it is kind of typical fairy tale stuff. And then, yeah, the second act, as you said, Thrasher, it gets so much darker. And the first time I experienced Into the Woods is in high school. I was in the high school drama program at Walton High School in Marietta, Georgia, and from 96 to 2000. And I think it was like in 1999 or 2000 where I went to this thespian convention thing somewhere in Georgia, which is thespian is a fancy name for – whatever, like the Actors Club
for people that have been in, for whatever.
Yeah, I mean, for like the kids that have been in the drama club a while in high school and been in the plays and stuff, which I was.
I prefer dramaturge.
And in this competition, a high school did Into the Woods, but because it was a competition, they had to kind of do like an abridged version, so they only did the first act.
Oh! All the best stuff is in the second act!
Yes.
Including all of the elaborate fourth wall breaking, which is so brilliant.
Oh, and the story just gets so dark and disturbing and takes a nice twist and turns. But if you look around, there is a DVD release of a 1989 performance of Into the Woods.
Oh, and also, I believe that same performance is available streaming on certain services.
Is it? Very good. So,
yep.
If you like fairy tales, which we've been talking about, try to catch a production of Into the Woods, either on stage or on the DVD release.
God, it is absolutely brilliant. Catchy musical numbers, too. I love the two melodramatic Prince Charmings.
Yeah, it's very funny. And the stage performance, I saw the Big Bad Wolf had a big prosthetic penis on him.
Well, no, I don't think he had a full penis. I believe they just gave him an obvious bulge.
The one I saw was very obvious.
Although supposedly that was toned down. Supposedly the original costume was very phallic. But I mean, they do play the whole sexual aspect of Little Red Riding Hood to the hilt.
Yep.
If you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I guess to the knot, depending on how you handle your lycanthropic anatomy.
To the meat and to veg, as it were. Okay. So, what is another fairy tale film you'd like to talk about?
Oh, gosh. Actually, this kind of violates our prohibition, but I'd like to talk about Enchanted.
Okay, I guess it's not a Disney cartoon.
Well, it's not a Disney cartoon, but it is a Disney movie, and it's right. Kind of a sly deconstruction of Disney princess fetishism.
How so?
Well, just that they know the it begins with a short animated segment, which is like you're watching the tail end of a Disney animated movie, and then the princess gets put on the princess, and she's banished from the kingdom and appears in modern day New York. So we have a bright, chirpy, singing princess in a gritty real world scenario, and we get to see that sort of personality clash where she tries to solve real world problems by doing what they always do in animated fairy tales, you know, such as one of the best sequence actually is when she's babysitting this guy's daughter. The house is dirty. They need to clean the house. Like, oh, cleaning can be fun. And she starts to sing. And since there are no woodland creatures to show up and help clean, it's all sewer rats and flies and cockroaches. But they still do all the shtick that you would see in an animated fairy tale movie.
And I like how it makes fun of the the musical sequences from a Disney cartoon.
Oh, yeah, like when she gets all the street performers organized so that she can sing a song about love.
Yeah, and the earnestness is really nice, too.
That's true.
The
I like
performances of Amy
that
Adams.
That character never winks, never blinks, and is never ironic, which really is what makes the movie work. Hmm. If any of the fairy tale characters were in the slightest bit insincere, the whole movie would fall apart.
Yep.
Oh, but hey, speaking of insane big budget modern versions of fairy tales, what didn't get Jack the Giant Killer?
I've never seen it. Have you?
I've seen older adaptations of it. I have not seen this new one. I guess I see the trailer and I see a CGI orgy and a movie whose tone is all over the place. I guess because that like I don't like snide remarks, and I don't like a movie that's making snide remarks about itself.
Yeah, I mean, originally in the trailers they called it Jack the Giant Killer, but then when they released it, they softened the title to Jack the Giant Slayer.
Well, some giant had actually killed some people in a theater, so out of sensitivity for that, they changed it.
I see. You know, I like the director, Brian Singer, but I saw the preview, and you're right. It just felt really jumbled. I hated the way the giants looked. I felt like they made, just from the trailer, maybe it looks different in the final film when you watch the whole movie, but the giants looked like they were trying to make them look really realistic looking.
Well, they look so gritty and ugly that I really feel like this should be more of a horror movie and less of sort of a comedy adventure, which is what the trailer appears to make it look like.
I just saw the trailer for this and thought, wow, that looks really bad. I mean, they've delayed it. They delayed it, you know, for a while now. So,
yeah. That's true. I remember this being like announced maybe 5 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Production might not have started at the time, but I've been hearing about this remake reimagining, whatever you want to call it. I've been hearing about this movie for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, Brian Singer has been attached to it since at least 2009, and it was filmed in 2011, so. And it's not doing very good worldwide at the box office. On the other hand, you know, can you call the Wizard of Oz stuff fairy tales? No, I guess not.
It tends to get lumped into the fairy tale category, yeah. Like Alice in Wonderland and a lot of other children's classics. But they really are just they're exceptional works of American fantasy literature.
But I think it's interesting that you look at the box office and theaters worldwide. Jack the Giant Slayer is tanking, but like Oz the Great and Powerful is doing very well. So,
well, I think everyone's heard of something related to Oz, if only from the MGM Wizard of Oz movie. Whereas Jack the Giant Killer, people, that's really only known by mythology buffs, folklore buffs, and people who remember cheesy versions from the 50s.
I think of that. I just think I think of the Mickey Mouse version of that story.
No, actually, I thought that was the Taylor.
It was Jack and the Beanstalk.
No, you're talking about I Killed Seven with One Blow, right?
No, I mean, yeah, that was a cartoon, but I'm thinking of it was something they did in the 90s, I think.
I don't recall. No, Mickey and the Beanstalk is much older than the 90s, if that's the one you're thinking of. But that also breaks our prohibition about discussing Disney animated movies.
I guess you're right. I didn't realize Mickey and the Beanstalk is from 1947, so that's not new at all.
Well, they kept re-releasing it and kept putting in different host segments.
Yeah, perhaps that's it.
Including one with Ludwig von Drake.
I might
favorite
be getting it confused. In the 90s, they did a Mickey Mouse. Was it a Three Musketeers, maybe?
Possibly. They did do a Prince and the Pauper.
That could be it, too. Whatever. I don't know what I'm talking about.
That's all right. But, well, this is, well, speaking of Jack and the Giant Killer and Oz, is that, you know, we've reached an age where we can render just about anything we can conceive of in CGI. But while we have the ability to do it, we don't have the responsibility that goes along with that level of power, which is where a movie like Jack the Giant Killer comes from.
I mean, do you feel that these sort of stories should be more like darker, like the original? I mean, look at the original Grimm's fairy tales, and some of those are very violent and incestuous.
I like a real amount of darkness, but the level of darkness doesn't concern me so much as is it a good story and are you telling it well? That's my primary concern. If it's a good story and it's told well, I really don't care how dark it is. But you know, I feel like they're using Jack the Giant Killer just as an excuse to throw a bunch of CGI monsters on the screen, you know, making mayhem. And that's not a story.
Man, I'm looking at upcoming, you know, like fairy tale films coming out. And have you heard of this one starring Angelina Jolie called Maleficent?
You know, that's actually been in the works forever. She plays the evil sorceress from Sleeping Beauty, correct?
Right, and this comes out in not until 2014, so not until next year.
Oh, yeah, this has been in development forever. And I got to admit, when this project was first announced, I was all for it because that is a terrific villain.
Good casting.
When it was announced, these movies weren't constantly coming out. When it was announced, this was a fresh, bold idea.
Yeah, I mean, gee, I don't think this really counts as a fairy tale, but like you said, like the Oz stuff, it can be kind of lumped in. I really think a film that kicked off this more modern trend of looking at like fairy tales or older kind of fantasies to remake as modern day stuff is the Tim Burton's adaptation of Alice in Wonderland. Which, like he said, is based on a book. It's not a fairy tale, but
is also shoehorned in with a final battle between good and evil.
Yes, that's correct.
Chosen ones and things like that. I am sick of chosen ones. It just seems like an excuse to have a hero without any kind of agency or direction.
It just seems like, I don't know. Yeah, it's just one of those things where, oh, we have to do an epic quest structure, and it ironically makes all the stories end up coming off as the same.
And the thing is, like that also doesn't work with Alice in Wonderland, because Alice in Wonderland is not structured like a novel with, you know, a single story running through it. It's a series of amusing, wondrous, and whimsical vignettes that are loosely interconnected by a framing device. And the movies, the adaptations of Alice in Wonderland that accept that and work with that are really, really good. But the ones that work against that and try to impose a greater structure on it are the ones that tend to fail.
One last film I'd like to talk about that I forgot to mention is in 2011, there was a film called Beastly.
Oh, I've got stuff to say about this.
Okay, so this was a modern day a very loose adaptation of Beauty and the Beast, which
so loose that there's no beauty and no beast.
Is that your problem with it?
Well, first, don't see this movie. Watch the fake trailer that they did on SNL, which is the way the movie probably should have really been. Here's my problem with it. Okay, so the rich asshole gets a curse put on him to make him the beast. So what does the curse do? Gives him piercings and badass tattoos. The curse makes him more sexy.
Even without hair.
Yeah, even without hair. Because I don't know where they've been for the past 50 years, but shaving your head bald is a sign of virility.
So you think they should have used like more prosthetics or CG to make him look really nasty looking?
I mean, yeah, if he's going to be cursed to look like a monster, make him look like a monster. Now, like, they can make it like more plausible. He doesn't have to grow horns or weird tufts of fur. You know, just, you know, make it look like he's got severe burns or like actual like congenital facial defects. Don't make him sexier in a different way.
Yeah, I mean, I just watched it. I was sort of mystified. It's pretty clear, even from the font, that they were trying to do, you know, like trying to appeal to the Twilight audience with Beastly. And they really make the guy such an unlikable asshole at the beginning that it never wins me to the other side. I don't feel like he gets redeemed.
Is the story told from his perspective?
Sort of, I guess. But like the weird thing is, like, so when he gets turned into the beast form with all the cool tattoos and a shaved head and stuff, like his punishment is like he gets like locked up in this ritzy skyrise Manhattan apartment. Like, that doesn't seem too bad.
Well, I mean, the beast does live in a castle and has like unseen servants. Like, it's just that, again, he hasn't really been cursed. He's been given a makeover.
And Mary-Kate Olsen, who used
to be in New York, you think you can't just walk around and be a badass tattooed guy on the street? Of course you can.
The only things was sort of amused by in this film is some of the casting. Neil Patrick Harris plays like a blind mentor to the Beast, which is sort of a funny performance. And Mary Kate Olsen, who, you know, as a child was one of the twins on Full House, the Olsen twins, plays kind of like the goth witch girl that curses him to begin with. And the makeup is kind of over her makeup and dress is kind of over the top.
No. See, can confirm this for me. Is Neil Patrick Harris the best thing in that movie?
Yeah, and he's not in it very much.
Good old NPH.
NPH really, really takes it home. I don't recommend you see Beastly, but it's an interesting sort of experiment. And I mean, speaking of that, you know, like they now have a Beauty and the Beast show on TV, you know, just like they had in the 80s, but this one's now is more contemporary.
Where they've like worked in genetic engineering or something.
I haven't seen it. I don't know anything about it. But I did used to watch briefly the series from the 80s starring Ron Perlman as Beast and Linda Hamilton of Terminator fame as the Beauty.
I recall that being a very enjoyable show. I don't remember any of it, but I recall it being an enjoyable show.
It ran for 3 seasons, and one of the writers in the show, George R.R. Martin, later wrote the Game of Thrones books, which, of course, the HBO series is based on. So I think we've done a fine job here on SequelCast Special looking at various fairy tale things. Is there any last thing you want to touch on that we haven't covered? Fairy tale movies or TV shows?
You know, I think we've done a very decent job. I mean, of course, there's more. Actually, you know, we didn't talk about the Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters.
I have not seen that. Have you?
I haven't. What I did see was the Asylum's version, Hansel and Gretel Warriors of Witchcraft.
How was that?
Where Hansel and Gretel are inexplicably Asian for some, despite their Dutch names. And their parents are dead, so they go to an academy that's like founded by an evil witch and that's trying to train witch hunters, descendants of witch hunters, to be witch cultists, and then there's some fighting and killing, and it's every terrible thing you might expect in an Asylum movie.
Hmm.
And they avoid them, I think, using their real name. Like, they don't find out their real names until the end of the movie.
Interesting, yeah. I, you know, speaking of which, on the SequelCast show, I was, not the show, what am I talking about? Jeez, I'm getting tired.
Beastly has drained you.
Yes, Beastly has drained me, indeed. On our Facebook page at facebook.com/SequelCast, listener Evan Berkey was talking about how he thought the Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters was really well done, and in fact, Paramount and MGM are developing a sequel to it. So that doesn't... Developing, what does that mean? Well, it means they're probably trying to get a script off the ground.
They're commissioning a script and probably trying to get a director attached.
But that doesn't mean it'll ever get made necessarily, but off a modest budget of $50 million, it's grossed a little bit over $200 million worldwide. So most of that being overseas compared to the U.S.
Which, as Mickey Rooney said in that episode of The Simpsons, the foreign markets are more important now than ever these days.
Yeah, Evan said it was dumb, but really well done. So I'll have to give it a shot. I mean, it's...
It's well executed idiocy.
You don't see that often, really.
I suppose not.
Great. So, tune in next time for a SequelCast Special where we talk about whatever topic we choose. Check out more podcasts.
You will listen to us talk about whatever we damn well want to talk about.
Exactly. Check out more podcasts, including our other series, SequelCast, Sequel Commentary, and Video Game SequelCast at SequelCast.com. And if you want to support the show, donate at SequelCast.com/donate. For a SequelCast Special, this is Matt.
And this is Fairy Tale Thrasher.
Same.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Once upon a time, there was three little pigs.
No, and we lived happily ever after.
We lived happily ever after. Until the sequel. There you go.
Sequelcast Special is a Hipster Goblin production.